AI is making waves in every field it touches. President Biden is now on TikTok, and the election draws closer each day. With so much going on in the world, it is hard to keep up with it all, let me tell you. Hi, I'm Kai Ryssdal, the co-host of Make Me Smart. It's a podcast from Marketplace. And every weekday, Kimberly Adams and I break down the latest in business and the economy with short daily episodes to make it easy for you to stay in the know. Listen to Make Me Smart wherever you get your podcasts.
Ladies and gentlemen, I give you the next President of the United States, Robert F. Kennedy Jr.
Welcome to Wired Politics Lab, a show about how tech is changing politics. I'm Leah Feiger, the senior politics editor at Wired. Today on the show, we're going to be talking all about Robert F. Kennedy Jr., who officially launched his campaign for president almost exactly 1 year ago.
I am going to take back this country with your help, the help of all the homeless Republicans and Democrats and independents who are Americans first. Thank you all very much.
RFK Jr.'s history, his extreme conspiracies, and his very online campaign tactics have all added up to a pretty effective independent presidential bid, one that continues to build a following. In recent weeks, he's been everywhere, announcing his Silicon Valley VP pick.
There is no American more qualified than Nicole Shanahan to play this role.
Appearing on dozens of podcasts to promote the campaign, pushing to actually get on the ballot across the United States. And 6 months from now, he might be a spoiler candidate in the 2024 election. Joining me in the studio to talk about all of that and more is McKenna Kelly, a senior politics writer at Wired, who also puts together our fabulous Politics Lab newsletter. McKenna, hi. How are your allergies?
I'm loaded up on Zyrtec, but I am very excited to be here.
Fantastic. And also Anna Merlin, a Wired contributor and RFK Jr. expert. Anna, how busy are you these days keeping up with the campaign?
Depressingly busy.
I mean, not the worst problem, but also not the best.
Not the best.
You've been covering RFK for years. It's not just been recently. Take us back a little bit. Who is this man and how did he get to where he is today?
Right. So Robert F. Kennedy Jr. is one of the most famous and well-connected anti-vaccine activists in the United States. He is, of course, one of those Kennedys. He's former President John F. Kennedy's nephew and the son of former Attorney General Robert F. Kennedy Sr., who was, of course, assassinated during his own presidential run.
Right.
The important things to know about Kennedy Jr. is that he began his career as an environmental attorney for a nonprofit called Natural Resources Defense Council. He had a very long, very well-respected career as a legitimate environmental lawyer. And then in 2005, he began promoting anti-vaccine ideas and causes and pretty much never stopped. He's now the chairman and currently during his campaign, the chairman on leave for an organization called Children's Health Defense that holds itself out to be a public health organization and is in fact one of the major drivers of anti-vaccine ideas in the United States.
Let's get into some of these anti-vax conspiracies that he's promoting by himself with CHD for the last 2 decades. The greatest hits, if you will. What are these?
One thing to know specifically about Children's Health Defense is that when it was founded in 2011, it was called the World Mercury Project.
Mm.
And it claimed that its purpose was to protect people from mercury in fish, medical products, dental amalgams, and vaccines. In reality, he was actually pretty focused on just the vaccine part, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And repeatedly claimed that thimerosal, which is a preservative that was once used in some childhood vaccines that was removed by 2011, was causing autism. Like, that's the gist. This is unproven. Vaccines do not cause autism. There's a huge body of scientific evidence to prove this.
An important note for all of our listeners, vaccines are good.
Vaccines are pretty good.
Yeah.
Vaccines are good. So he began with making this claim about mercury, and then at some point decided to broaden out a little bit and change the name of the organization to Children's Health Defense, which again purports to be an environmental mm-hmm, organization, mm-hmm. but is almost singularly focused on vaccines.
And very specific branding too, Children's Health Defense. Like, of course mm-hmm. he is getting support in this.
Yeah.
Who does not want to defend children's health?
Yeah, it's a very, very canny name.
And so this is all pre-COVID era, right? And then
it is.
And then COVID happened.
Yeah. I mean, the thing about COVID is that it has been such a boon to both Kennedy and other anti-vaccine activists, and arguably Kennedy more than most anti-vaccine activists, because in addition to focusing on the purported harms of vaccines, he is also uniquely focused on the supposed civil rights restrictions coming from the federal government. Mm-hmm. Aimed at the anti-vaccine community, has been heavily involved in suing the Biden administration for supposedly, you know, censoring anti-vaccine activists during the pandemic. So this has been an enormous boon to the anti-vaccine movement and Kennedy specifically. And this isn't just opinion. Like, they have made a lot of money during this era. There's been a bunch of reporting about this.
And they're everywhere, right, McKenna? I mean, we were just talking about how just like his influence exploded online after this.
So the COVID pandemic really created the perfect storm for Kennedy. He already had this large following. People know that he's Kennedy. He was building up his social media platforms. Even post-Trump in like 2016, when Trump was elected, he had this whole movement of like fake news, right? Anti-institutionalism. All of this really bolstered what Kennedy was saying. And so by the time we get to 2020, he's blowing up on Instagram so much, saying all this anti-vax stuff, that Instagram ends up taking him down.
Right. But he gained this huge following. And I mean, in just like a rundown of some of the stuff that he was saying, claimed that the vaccine could kill people, proponent of the 5G, like tracking microchip implanted by Bill Gates controversy, ivermectin use. This is all like from him, right, Anna?
Yeah, he has promoted all of those things in various forms. It's also worth noting that Kennedy has said throughout his career that he is pro-safe vaccine, which is, of course, a total red herring. Vaccines are incredibly safe. They're one of the most tested medical products on earth. But it has been a way for him to try to sidestep around the thing that he is the most known for, which is anti-vaccine activism in all its forms.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, in 2022, his comments at the anti-vax rally in D.C., they were wild.
Yeah, he intimated that vaccine mandates were worse than the Holocaust.
Even in Hitler Germany, you could cross the Alps into Switzerland. You can hide in an attic like Anne Frank did.
Which was so controversial that his wife, Cheryl Hines, the actor who mostly tries to stay out of this to some extent, actually had to issue a statement saying, "My husband's reference to Anne Frank at a mandate rally in D.C. was reprehensible and insensitive. The atrocities that millions endured during the Holocaust should never be compared to anyone or anything. His opinions are not a reflection of my own." It is worth noting that that tweet has since, several years later, been deleted.
Ooh, good find. Love to hear that. So that's vaccines. Talk to me about his other conspiracies that he's been promoting.
Well, when we talk about online conspiracies, what is one of the biggest ones that we see? You know, what is an entry point for people?
Hit me.
The CIA assassinating JFK. And he's dabbling in that. The first like big interview that he did with Joe Rogan last summer, they spent a lot of time questioning whether the CIA was involved with the assassination.
You're talking about your uncle who's assassinated, and you believe the intelligence agencies were part of that. What happens to you?
Well, I got to be careful. I'm aware of that danger, and I don't live in fear of it, but I'm not stupid about it, and I take precautions.
That's been part of the thing for him, where he's asking for Secret Service and being denied it by the administration. That's like something that I'm always getting campaign fundraising emails about from him.
Yeah, that's turned into a big hobby horse for him, is implying that it is unusual to not be granted Secret Service protection as a candidate.
Which is just not true. I mean, we're scratching the surface here of all of these conspiracies, but they don't exist in a vacuum. They've already impacted people. Talk to us about that.
You know, Mr. Kennedy's ideas have been enormously influential in the United States. I've watched him speak at so many anti-vaccine rallies and get standing ovations. People cry when he comes in the room. But it is also worth noting that he has had an effect abroad. In June of 2019, Mr. Kennedy and Cheryl Hines took a trip to Samoa, a trip that was organized by a local anti-vaccine activist. And in the months that followed Kennedy's visit, there was an enormous measles outbreak in Samoa, where previously there had not been extremely high incidences of measles. 83 people died, mostly infants and children. He has denied any responsibility for that outcome or those deaths. But a vaccinologist in New Zealand told the Associated Press that local and regional anti-vaccine activists had very much been taking their ideas and their cues from Kennedy, specifically the idea that the MMR vaccine, which protects infants from measles, was in some way harmful. And so this vaccinologist, whose name is Helen Patousis-Harris, told the AP they amplified the fear and mistrust, which resulted in the amplification of the epidemic and an increased number of children dying. Children were being brought for care too late.
That's absolutely terrible. And It's clearly being used to mobilize his supporters right now. How have these conspiracies been featuring in his campaign so far?
What was interesting is that initially RFK's campaign announcement tried to downplay his anti-vaccine activism. It very much focused on his family legacy. The announcement was made in Boston rather than in Santa Monica, where he lives, clearly like trying to tie himself to the Kennedy family name, despite the fact a not insignificant number of his family members have issued statements denouncing both his anti-vaccine activism and his candidacy. But he pretty quickly returned to form. I wrote about this a few months after he launched his candidacy, he had a health roundtable that was entirely focused on very well-known anti-vaccine activists.
These conspiracists are on his campaign, right, Anna? Like on the campaign team.
Yes. Del Bigtree is a former TV producer who is now the executive director of another anti-vax organization called ICAN. He was also the producer of a documentary called Vaxxed, which is a very, very famous and infamous anti-vax documentary that was pretty effective and widespread.
He's the comms manager. Like he is the guy responding to press inquiries and basically leading like messaging for the campaign.
I mean, his entire campaign, though, is littered with this. A few weeks ago, he announced Nicole Shanahan as his VP pick. You covered that announcement for us, and she has been coming out in recent weeks with a ton of vaccine-related conspiracies. How does she factor into his conspiracy world? Talk us through that.
So the interesting thing about Nicole Shanahan is, McKenna, I think this is true for you too, right? Like we didn't exactly know what she was doing in the RFK world, and then she came on stage.
If you are one of those disillusioned Republicans, I welcome you to join me, a disillusioned Democrat, in this movement to unify and heal America.
And then on Tuesday, she issued a tweet that seemed to indicate that she believes that she was harmed by COVID vaccines. So clearly, these are beliefs that run pretty deep for her.
And, you know, even if he has been claiming that he's staying away from like some of these conspiracies, specifically COVID vaccine related conspiracies in his campaign, she is a part of his campaign, a major forward facing part of his campaign. So for her to be tweeting things like that, it's very clear where their priorities are. The last few weeks of media coverage on RFK, though, has felt really devoid of all of these conspiracies and just hasn't really been talking about it. It's been very confusing to be reading articles about him and his campaign. And it takes, I don't know, 10 paragraphs until someone says, ah, yes, once a noted anti-vax advocate. What's happening there? Why are we normalizing this?
I mean, I think it's partially, we saw this happen with Trump in 2016, too, where all these outrageous things just became, the press was saying it time and time again, that I guess like some people expect it to be common knowledge. But we're still in like the beginning of the presidential campaign. People are still getting familiarized with a lot of these candidates, you know, getting ready to vote in November.
People are still learning who this is.
And they're doing a disservice to their audience if you're not saying in the lead paragraph of your story, RFK Jr., comma, noted anti-vaxxer guy, comma, and then getting into your lead. Like, that's a total disservice to your audience.
Agreed.
I've also seen him referred to as a former anti-vaccine activist, which is insane and garbage and ridiculous. Yeah, I think that there is also, not to make generalizations among political reporters, just more of an interest in and an obligation to cover the horse race element of it. And it is difficult for folks who have not been steeped in his misinformation for years to like really parse some of what he's saying and deal with it effectively in an article.
But the thing is we can't separate these things. He's been using these conspiracies to boost his campaign and bolster his online presence. We're going to take a quick break, and when we get back, we're going to talk about all of that and what it means for 2024.
Hi, I'm Jeremy Larson, the Reviews Director of Pitchfork, and this podcast is supported by Pitchfork Music Festival. Pitchfork Music Festival will take place July 19th through the 21st at Union Park in Chicago, Illinois. This year's lineup features Jamie XX, Alanis Morissette, Black Pumas, Carly Rae Jepsen, Brittany Howard, Jay Paul, Muna, Jesse Ware, 100 Gex, and many more. The festival also features diverse vendors as well as a specialty record, poster, and craft fairs, and works to support local businesses while promoting the Chicago arts and food communities as a whole. For more information on tickets and lineup, visit pitchforkmusicfestival.com.
Welcome back to Wired Politics Lab. McKenna, you wrote a piece a bit ago about how RFK Jr. has successfully turned the internet into his campaign headquarters. What exactly does that mean?
So the campaign has invested so much money and time into getting Kennedy's name in front of voters. And he, of course, has a problem with the mainstream media. He believes he's being censored. And so he's looking for different channels and avenues to reach people. And right out of the gate, he went on Joe Rogan, like we mentioned, and he's just been talking to literally almost any podcast host and any internet creator who would talk to him.
I mean, he's called 2024 the podcast election.
Yes. So I think what he actually meant was that he was referencing how fragmented the media ecosystem is right now. I mean, we're seeing Trump's campaign, Biden's campaign, everyone's struggling to reach voters where they are because some are on Discord, some are on Instagram, some are on Facebook still. And how do you tailor your message for not only these platforms, but the people who consume that kind of content? And so I think part of his strategy is to find people with large followings who maybe have, you know, a real direct relationship with their followers and to get his name out there. And the apoliticalness of many of the creators that he's talked to, like there was the shark lady.
Oh my gosh, I'm still very sad about this. A scuba diving shark influencer that I follow in Hawaii, who does some really excellent work, featured him and had him on her Instagram to her many, many followers who are all environmentalists and very, very excited about RFK. He is out there. He is everywhere online.
Sure. And that's the kind of audiences that he's hoping to reach. These people who aren't quite so steeped into the conspiracy stuff, the anti-vax stuff, are passionate about different parts of his platform and, you know, trying to reach people who aren't going to ask him those hard questions about vaccines and all of this stuff that we're talking about right now.
And simultaneously, he is talking to quote-unquote mainstream media. He's in The Times. He's on Fox. He's everywhere.
He's not being censored.
He's not being censored. But a lot of campaigns are courting influencers right now. He was maybe early to this, but it does seem like Biden and Trump have been picking up on this. What makes him different?
The thing that makes him different is that he is doing this constantly. I think with Biden, their team has been very specific in courting specific people who come to these different events. For example, I was at this fundraiser, the Biden-Obama-Clinton fundraiser a couple of weeks ago when they were being interviewed by Stephen Colbert. And while I was like hidden away in the Rockettes dressing room from like 4:30 to 8:30.
Sending me very sad texts, I might add.
All of these influencers were in the Radio City Music Hall watching the entire performance. And beforehand, they even went out to dinner with Biden. So this is a very like specific relationship in integrating these people into the campaign. Trump, on the other hand, he's been doing some podcasts. He hasn't been doing too much influencer stuff. Of course, this week, Jake Paul asked Trump to come to his Mike Tyson fight this summer. But other than that, he's been on the Nelk Boys podcast. He's done stuff like that. But when it comes to RFK Jr. and what he's doing, it's that it is absolutely constant. This man is churning out content, churning out content. He's clipping the things, the interviews that he does, and throwing them on TikTok, where he is the presidential candidate with the largest following on TikTok.
Also, it's not all related to politics. Like, the content that he's promoting isn't even all necessarily related to his campaign. In your piece, you talked about the PAC that's supporting him, American Values 2024, which was throwing hundreds of thousands of dollars at Instagram fitness influencers. Talk to us.
And they're
about
still
that.
Doing it. So I think that this was really, it was really creative and innovative way to get emails of people. But what happened is that the campaign was feeding hundreds of thousands of dollars to this company called Creator & Company. And so I was looking at the FEC records and I was like, this is interesting. And so I go to the American Values Instagram and I'm seeing that they're getting tagged in all of these fitness posts. It's just random fitness influencers who are promoting this America Fitness Challenge 24 that the PAC has been throwing. And so it's a very apolitical thing, telling people to post like how you get 24 minutes of exercise.
And are they referencing RFK Jr. in these posts?
Some are and some don't.
That's so weird.
And so these are like micro influencers with a couple thousand followers to people who are close to like a million followers. It's a very, you know, different size in that. And the thing is that if you were posting it and you tagged the challenge, you could win this $25,000 gym setup at your house, which, of course, you have to go to the American Values PAC website and type in your email.
Wild.
Yeah.
Absolutely wild. And taking us back for a moment to our first segment, how did RFK Jr. make the leap from the conspiracy world to the online campaign world? It does feel like quite a natural step following with anti-vax content and weaponizing it and gaining all these followings on Instagram, etc.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think he has been using social media to his advantage for a very long time. Talking about Jake Paul, RFK Jr. also met with Jake Paul, where he said that he was having Jake teach him how to TikTok and things like that. I mean, now, like we were talking about, the Washington Post just profiled this creator called Link Lauren, who has been creating, he's been doing a lot of stuff, but before he was making music, last summer he was like a Royals commentator talking about like Meghan Markle, and then he got slowly into politics, and by just last month, he is a senior advisor on the campaign. This kid who's 25, whose main job is creating internet viral content.
Right, right. Wow. Anna, talk to me about that jump, the conspiracy world to the online campaign world. What are you seeing there? How did that even happen?
I mean, one of the big things that happened for RFK specifically is that there are a bunch of, let's just generalize, tech guys who are very interested in heterodox systems of knowledge, right? They're very interested in knowledge outside the mainstream. And that really started in the tech world with body hacking. Mm-hmm, you know, mm-hmm. A lot of these tech guys got very interested in bulletproof coffee and how to make themselves stronger and fitter through unorthodox means.
The Huberman of it all.
The Huberman of it all, who is, he goes to the same gym as RFK, and they've often talked about
what?
Running into each other at the gym. Sure, it's a small club, God. And you're not in it. Yeah, none of us
oh
are.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
A surprising thing that makes so much sense.
So much sense.
It does. And so it's been a very comfortable leap for RFK to be talking to people like Rogan, to be talking to all these other tech guys who have podcasts, because they're all together interested in what is often called by academics stigmatized knowledge. And so it is very easy for them to discuss that and to transition very naturally from anti-vax stuff into other forms of stigmatized knowledge. So it's a great, comfy, cozy fit all around.
He really is the most wired candidate this cycle. The combination of influencer meets money, meets prestige, meets conspiracy, meets online. It's kind of wild to watch this all play out. Can we talk a little bit about him using his family name to garner support? How does that factor into everything, Anna?
Well, so he's drawn very heavily on his family legacy. As I said, you know, he had his announcement in Boston. He has talked a lot in very casual terms about my uncle, my father, you know, he's constantly reminding you that he is a Kennedy. At the same time, this has backfired a bit because, as I said, there are so many Kennedys. Every time you think you've reached the end of the Kennedys, there are more Kennedys. Just popping out of the woodwork. It's incredible.
The Russian doll of American royalty.
It's a Russian doll of Kennedys. That's right. A group of Kennedys wrote an open letter in, I believe, 2019, calling him tragically wrong about vaccines. And then just recently, his Super Bowl ad, a Super Bowl ad promoting RFK's campaign that was paid for by Nicole Shanahan, his now VP, was literally designed to look like a vintage JFK ad. It was created in this very certain and specific way. And then elements of his family also objected to that and said, our family would not have approved of your anti-vaccine activism. We find it offensive that you are tying your campaign to this.
The best part of that moment was he apologized on Twitter. It was like, oh, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to offend anyone in the family. I didn't mean to do that. And then left the campaign video as his pinned tweet. It was good seeing that together.
Love that.
He did. Yeah. Yeah.
The thing that's very notable about that ad is that it's literally just referencing Kennedy, the Kennedy Empire, and not once does it talk about policy, does it really gesture at anything. And there's been a lot of polls recently from organizations like nonprofit groups and stuff who have been asking voters like who they're going to vote for. And if someone only knows Kennedy by name, he's a lot higher up, you know, his chances are a lot higher. But once you tell someone anything, it was like literally anything about RFK Jr., his numbers just tank.
Wild.
So that's why that ad is very interesting to me, because it leaves all of that out.
Totally, totally. And I mean, McKenna, you've been looking at this for so long now. It's not just the Kennedy celebrity. He has tons of other celebrities.
A lot of other celebrities, like comedians, who have podcasts as well. I'm thinking he was on Theo Von recently. Rob Schneider is like constantly stumping for RFK Jr. What was it? Eric Clapton.
Well,
had this,
Eric Clapton.
It makes sense.
It's so sad.
But Eric Clapton had a huge fundraiser. Like, he's able to get...
Alicia Silverstone. That's the one that you told me about that made me particularly sad. I cannot
She's been involved in anti-vaccine activism since at least 2015.
Yeah, that
That was new to me. I'll be honest, yeah. That was new to me. Obviously not new to you as all of our conspiracy vaccine experts over here, but can I rewatch Clueless in the same way? I don't know. Mm-hmm. I don't think so. I think not.
Yeah, the celebrities really have that macro influence, right? Where they're able to help spread his name, his things like that. And then you see the pack, of course, reaching these fitness influencers, targeting micro influencers mm-hmm. who have that direct engaged relationship. So the campaign is really focused on reaching people all across the board and then at a smaller level, engaging them and activating to vote.
Right, right. So what does all of this add up to? The family conspiracies, the money, the celebrity fundraising, the podcasts, the conspiracies. Where does his campaign go from here? And could his candidacy actually make a difference? What states is he actually eligible to run in?
So the campaign has reported that it's gathered enough signatures to be on a handful of ballots on states like Hawaii, Nevada, New Hampshire, and Utah. And he's also claiming that he's on ballots in North Carolina and Arizona as well. At least three major battleground states for
this
election.
And he just added Iowa this past weekend, the campaign says. And I guess to clarify, this is what his campaign is saying. This is what the super PAC is saying. We don't actually know this for sure. Could his candidacy actually make a difference, Anna? What do you think?
I mean, this has been the argument since the beginning of his candidacy. Like, who is it going to make a difference for? Mm. He is not going to be president. I feel pretty confident in saying that. And so the argument is it going to draw more votes from the Trump or the Biden side? And I would say that anybody who makes one of those declarations confidently is probably overly confident. I think it will probably draw votes from both sides of the aisle. But I wrote, you know, when he announced his candidacy, that primarily, like, his candidacy is an ad for himself. Mm-hmm. It's an ad for himself, his anti-vax activism, and for children's health defense. And so whatever it does to the elections or, you know, the vote, it's going to do infinitely more for his public image and his ability to fundraise for his other causes after he's no longer on the campaign trail.
I don't know, Anna. I think I have to disagree a little bit. I think that the RFK Jr. campaign is only going to help Trump. When we're looking at polls of Trump voters and Biden voters, Trump voters are committed. They are ready to vote for Trump for another term. Biden voters are slightly less so. And I mean, this is a very unpopular election across the board generally. There are a lot of voters out there, independent or Biden or otherwise, that may be able to overlook RFK Jr.'s conspiracy-addled past. I mean, if it's not being discussed that much in media right now, which it's unfortunately not, then it's an easy way to just kind of zoom ahead and say, I hate these two options. I'm going to go for this one. I'm going to make a statement. And it really doesn't take that many votes to have a big impact, especially in the states that Kennedy's trying to get on the ballot for. I'm really nervous about how this could play out.
I think we're all nervous.
It's a nerve-wracking next 6 months.
It's a nerve-wracking next 6 months.
I don't know if I have a precise opinion on who RFK Jr. benefits in the long run, but earlier this week, a former RFK Jr. campaign official in New York was fired because she had said that her main goal was preventing a Biden victory and that an RFK Jr. ticket really helps Trump.
That says a lot about where people within the campaign are at right now, and I don't think we can discount that. You can find more on McKenna and Anna's reporting on this and RFK Jr.'s campaign at large on Wired.com. Go give it a read, and we'll be back in one moment to talk about our Conspiracies of the Week, Kennedy edition.
Hey, I'm Brian Stelter, host of Inside the Hive from Vanity Fair. This week, I'm talking with Lachlan Cartwright and Dan Adler, who have been in the courtroom for the Trump hush money trial. We're hearing about the seedy world of pro-Trump tabloids and whether these actually helped or hurt Trump more.
Here we had the prime tabloid candidate, Donald Trump, and we had all this material. We had the resources to be doing this work. And instead, the people above me decided we were going to catch and kill these stories.
Join me, Brian Stelter, on Inside the Hive from Vanity Fair. Listen wherever you get podcasts.
Welcome back to Wired Politics Lab. It's time to play Conspiracy of the Week. McKenna and Anna have picked out their favorite conspiracies related to the Kennedy family, and I'm going to pick my winner. Anna, what do you have this week?
I mean, my favorite Kennedy conspiracy theory is that the Kennedys are one of the 13 satanic bloodlines that rule the world.
Stop.
Yeah, which is a good one. And is actually recirculating mostly on Telegram right now, obviously, as one of the kind of like fringe oppositions to his campaign. But this idea that the Kennedys are part of the 13 satanic bloodlines, that all of the satanic bloodlines are also Illuminati, but also incredible. That all of the satanic bloodlines are being subjected to mind control by some other entity. It's great. It's just, there's no limit to how far down you can go if you want to get into that stuff.
I love this one a lot. McKenna, can you beat satanic family legacies?
I don't know, but my favorite, my personal favorite, because I love Ted Cruz Zodiac Killer conspiracies. And like we mentioned, CIA, JFK assassination conspiracies. There is one conspiracy that Ted Cruz's father was involved some way with Lee Harvey Oswald in assassinating JFK.
That's ridiculous. That's absolutely ridiculous. A real good full circle moment for the tinfoil hats out there. Love to see it. I'm so sorry. I think I have to give Anna the win this week.
No, she wins.
That is a really, really good one.
Yeah, I mean, can you blame me?
Absolutely.
I spend a lot more time on this than McKenna does. She has a real job. So.
Oh, stop.
Thanks for listening to Wired Politics Lab. If you like what you heard today, make sure to follow the show and rate it on your podcast app of choice. We also have a newsletter, which McKenna writes every week. The link to the newsletter and the Wired reporting we mentioned today are in the show notes. Anna, what can we promote for you? What are you up to right now?
You can find me on Twitter and Blue Sky.
Find her there. And if you'd like to get in touch with us with any questions, comments, or show suggestions, please write to politicslab@wired.com. That's politicslab@wired.com. We're excited to hear from you. Wired Politics Lab is produced by Jake Harper. Jake Loomis is our studio engineer. Amar Lal mixed this episode. Jordan Bell is our executive producer. And Chris Bannon is global head of audio at Condé Nast. I'm your host, Leah Feiger. And we'll be back in your feeds with a new episode next week. Thanks for listening.
The 2024 election means this year is going to be chock full of drama and nail-biting suspense. You deserve a politics and news podcast with expert analysis. No spin, no BS. Just trusted journalists talking about what you need to know. I'm David Plotz, and each week on Slate's Political Gabfest, I sit down with the New York Times' Emily Bazelon and CBS News' John Dickerson to do just that. Join us as we unpack the latest in politics, news, and the courts. Listen to the Political Gabfest every Thursday, wherever you get your podcasts.